Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is a special post-election live call-in episode of the United States of Anxiety, WNYC's election series that documents the experiences and perspectives that informed voters and their choice for president. I'm Ilya Meritz from the WNYC Newsroom. It was a busy weekend for Donald Trump. The president-elect settled a years-old fraud case against Trump University for the sum of $25 million. He spent the weekend at his golf club in northern New Jersey interviewing cabinet candidates. All the while, questions swirled around the blurring line between Trump's political career and his businesses. But it was Vice President-elect Mike Pence's visit to a Broadway theater that really captivated social media and cable news this weekend.
Vice President-elect Pence, we welcome you and we truly thank you for joining us here at Hamilton and American Musical. We really do. We are the diverse America who are alarmed and anxious that your new administration will not protect us, our planet, our children, our parents, or defend us and uphold our inalienable rights, sir. But we truly hope that this show has inspired you to uphold our American values and to work on behalf of all of us. All of us.
Actor Brandon Victor Dixon, a.k.a. Aaron Burr. Trump, of course, wasted no time in shooting back on Twitter. Quote, "The theater must always be a safe and special place. The cast of Hamilton was very rude last night to a very good man, Mike Pence. Apologize!" Exclamation mark. This hour, we're going to talk about art and culture in Trump's America, and I want to let you in on why I picked this topic. In the days immediately following the election, I spent all of my time in hotels and airplanes in the Midwest. I was there for work, and everywhere I turned, it seemed I was confronted with another huge CNN TV screen. I am a guy who lives and breathes news, but for a few days at least, I felt like newspapers and TV news were not helping me. Ditto for Facebook and Twitter. So instead, I plugged into my Spotify, I picked up a book, and listeners, this hour, we want to hear from you. What culture have you been tuning into for inspiration, for perspective, for comfort following the election? The number to call is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. It could be music, a novel, movies, really any medium, any kind of culture. We want to hear about it. What are you doing to feed your mind and tune out the static? 212-433-9692 is the number, or you can tweet your comments at WNYC. And I'm joined now by a longtime outsider artist and entertainment in the city of New York, Lady Bunny. She DJs, she sings, she makes jokes. Welcome to WNYC.
I thought I was an insider. Now you've got me feeling anxious.
Oh, dear. Well, I hope I didn't offend. Bunny.
No, I'm not easily offended.
Bunny, how's your art doing since the election? Have you had any shows?
I have. I'm doing a show right now at Stonewall Inn called Trans Jester, which kind of pokes fun at what we're still able to laugh at. And I think comedians are important right now. I mean, George Carlin was able to, you know, add a punchline to really ugly truths like, does your vote really matter? I mean, if you just get up on stage and say your vote doesn't matter, we're still going to be spending a lot of money on war. We're still going to be cutting taxes. You know, no one's really going to enjoy that. But if you can weave a punchline into it. Similarly, Jon Stewart was one of the loudest, you know, voices, him a comedian, for peace. And, you know, I think there's a lot of value for the kind of messages that comedians can bring through humor.
Bunny, I wanted to talk to you specifically because it feels like we're at the dawn of a new age of vulgarity, but also vulnerability. And those two V words are something that a drag queen like yourself knows really, really well. I'm just kind of curious, like, your thoughts of, like, where... I mean, we heard so much vulgarity, so much of it from the president-elect over the course of the last year. I'm wondering where you see your shows going. Like, can anything be vulgar after some of the stuff that we heard in this campaign? Or is everything fair game in every forum now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's the whole argument, are you normalizing, you know, Trump by permitting these statements or even saying, you know... I like offensive humor myself, but I'm not running for president. And, you know, I come from the far left, not the land of Donald Trump. But even I am confused and just, over all of the preciousness with the PC language. I mean, at one point, Donald Trump addressed the LGBTQ community. I said, I thought he's more politically correct than I am. I was still saying LGBT.
Right. Well,
so sometimes we're fighting so much over these words, you know, and the correct terms that, you know, now the LGBT community has an enemy plainly in sight. Maybe it's not so important that we've been fighting each other over these words.
Yeah, although LGBTQI seems to be one group that, at least at the off the top of my head, I can't remember him directly insulting, but I may be mistaken in that respect.
He'll get there.
All right. Well, we do want your calls, and I think we have a caller already. It's Nick in Sunnyside, Queens. Nick, tell us, what have you been reading, listening to, consuming?
I've been looking through a Polaroid camera for most of the election. My specific art is I take group portraits on Polaroid film.
Uh-huh.
And on the night of the election, I went to a big art show called Mock the Vote, which was by Cash Force Smells on Bowery Street, full of people that wouldn't have been watching the coverage anyway, featuring signs that mocked almost every aspect of the election. And we blew it up. And then after mocking the vote, I went to the last piano bar night at Manhattan Inn to take a picture, a group photo for the end of it, and I have a flip phone, so I was able to hide out in a piano bar while people looked and discussed on their iPhones, and that's how I was able to stay abreast of the news.
And what does that do for you, like taking pictures?
Creative.
I bring people together, really for no – I mean, I don't want to get political, but what I mean is that in a fascist country, I probably would be gone after because I get people together for no other reason at all than to just get them together for a physical photograph. If I lived in a country with a bad government, they would pull me aside and say, you need to start doing this for the state. And if you don't do this for the state, we're going to hurt you. And that's what I'm thinking about right now.
Is that some of the anxiety that you're living with at the moment?
Not at all. That'll never happen in America. But, I mean, I feel bad for other people in countries that literally can't just get people together for a Polaroid picture for no reason at all.
All right, Nick in Sunnyside, Queens. Let's hear next from sticking with the borough of Queens. Let's hear next from Stan in Forest Hills. What's going
yes.
on, Stan?
How are you?
I'm good.
Well, I was for Mrs. Clinton, and of course that didn't go too well. But I've been watching movies, political movies, specifically two in particular that draws a line between fantasy and reality, if you think about it. One was The Best Man, made in 1964 with Henry Fonda. I don't know if many people heard of it, Henry Fonda. And he ran for the president, and they gave it up at the convention for somebody else. He did the good thing. Of course, that would never happen today. The other was The Candidate with Robert Redford, who ran as a senator and was the good-looking guy against the old guy and wins, and then he says, okay, what do we do now? I can only imagine that's what Donald Trump said when he won. What do we do now? So reality and fantasy came into play in both movies, and the fantasy is what we're living through today.
All right, Stan, thank you for your call. Bunny, what are your favorite political films? Have you seen either of those?
I love The Manchurian Candidate. I haven't seen either of those.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I did catch a little bit of the Redford flick on AMC the other night, and it looked great. We actually recorded the next showing of it. So maybe I'll get there.
Well, you know, I think we're talking about movies, and I mean, Donald Trump comes from the world of reality TV, and I mean, it's so insane that what reality does is it kind of hoists personalities up as stars. So you're not seeing actresses, you know, or actors with scripts. You're putting, you know, quote, real housewives in a room with martini lunches and having the win is if they have an argument and snatch each other's wigs off. You know, so, I mean,
you sound like someone who's been in that situation.
Well, I'm not married, so I'm not a housewife. But you know, it's like we have been pushing singers who can't sing. We've been pushing, you know, housewives who aren't real housewives. I mean, and now we've got a reality TV show. I mean, you know, Ronald Reagan was an actor, but at least he was an actual actor. I mean, someone has suggested to me that, you know, people may have gravitated towards Trump who are not interested in politics because the issues weren't discussed much, were they? I mean, his salacious comments were discussed, but maybe they were drawn to politics for that reason, because reality TV rewards train wreck behavior. So, you know, maybe they are now interested for the first time in politics because he is so bullish.
So, like, maybe that's kind of sort of a good thing?
I don't think so, because I would prefer to see, you know, someone with talent, not someone who is going to have an argument over a guest list at an imaginary party. I mean, you know, someone even suggested that some millennials may be drawn to, you know, a crazy candidate like Trump because they find him entertaining. They grew up with reality TV. Unlike me, they don't remember a time when you weren't on TV unless you had something to offer. I mean, we made fun of Vanna White because she didn't do much except turn numbers.
But she did that very well. She did that very well.
Yes.
We've got Jamie on deck in Crown Heights, I believe, with something to say about reality TV. What's going on, Jamie?
Hi. So I will first say I'm a millennial and I don't find Trump entertaining or anything like that. I mean, I find him pretty terrifying. And so what I've been doing to sort of keep myself sane and not just spend all of my time refreshing the horror show that is Twitter is I have been escaping by watching The Bachelorette Canada.
The Bachelorette Canada? Are you Canadian?
No, I'm not.
Is it, is The Bachelorette Canada like a little more sort of polite, socialistic, communitarian?
It actually is. It's a lot nicer and sweeter than, I've only watched one season of The American Bachelorette, but it's really wonderful. Like, there are really great guys on it. The Bachelorette is awesome. And it's like, it's a, you know, a fantasy world, and it's trying to make viewers happy and think about love and look at beautiful places and beautiful people going to them. And it's just, it's been my, like, safe, happy place for the last week.
Wow. And Jamie, if people want to catch it, it's Bachelorette Canada's on American TV, or like, where do you get this?
No, it's not.
Okay. Go out and find it. Figure it out for yourselves, folks. Thank you, Jamie.
Jamie, don't you think that most reality TV kind of rewards the arguments and the setup fights? I mean, I'm glad this one shows beautiful places and loving relationships, but usually that's the stock in trade of reality TV.
Yeah, I mean, there is some conflict, and there are, you know, maybe three or four episodes where a lot of the plot is driven by, you know, quote unquote villain, but he's so irritating and dismissible. And there are, it really does feel
you're
like
normalizing Trump.
No. Oh, please. It's not like
I'm
I can't
teasing.
Even laugh about that.
I'm
but there teasing. Are real. There are real relationships. It really feels like there are real relationships being built between the Bachelorette and some of the contestants. And it's just, you know, I feel like it's really important to be engaged, but it's really important to take care of yourself also. And this is the way that I've been giving my brain and my heart and my pulse a bit of a break.
All this talk of Americans who want to move to Canada. Well, maybe the Bachelorette Canada is going to push you there. Thank you for your call, Jamie. We have tweets coming in as well from Peg Caruso, Green Day, both the New Revolution Radio and American Idiot. And from Draco Chanel, great name, I watch Star Trek to inspire me to move forward in life, an optimistic future of cooperation and understand wrapped in a sci-fi story. Let's go next to Ayub in Manhattan. Okay, it looks like we don't have him ready. Let's go to Juliet in Newark. Juliet, are you there?
Hello, yes, I'm here.
Hi. So, Juliet, if you don't mind turning down your radio, and then tell me what art or culture are you consuming at post-election?
I have been dependent on going to my Bible. Yes, I'm here.
Oh, yeah?
I am dependent on my Bible.
What book of the Bible? Which book of the Bible, Juliet?
I have gone to the Word of God. That is where I get my culture from. And I'm trusting on the Lord for everything, not some things.
And are you feeling, what's your anxiety level like post-election?
With my Psalms, and I read all over.
All right.
The Psalms.
All right, Juliet in Newark, thank you for calling. I'm Ilya Meritz on WNYC. My guest is Lady Bunny, legendary drag performer. We are taking your calls on arts and culture post-election, especially if you're one of those people who is taking a break from cable news, maybe even taking a break from the newspaper. We hope you're not taking a break from WNYC, and we hope you will call in now. The number to call is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Bunny, you are someone who's spoken out about AIDS, social prejudice, inequality. Is drag kind of inherently political, or is that a choice that you made to be political?
I come from a time in the East Village where ACT UP was happening, and we were scared because people were dying. Our friends were dying, and they died quite quickly. So unlike today, where AIDS is a livable disease, a livable fatal disease, but they, it was kind of in my DNA to fight. But, I do think it's important, whether it's Psalms or something that gives you comfort or the Bachelorette from Canada, to reconnect with joy, because we've all been fighting through this whole election season. And I see people, putting up, statuses, delete me if you voted for this person, delete me if you're a third party voter. Well, we need to have conversations, first of all. Maybe we're a little bit sick of it now, and we need to reconnect with dancing or food or whatever, gives us joy in life, even if it's just to refuel to fight what may be coming down the pipeline, which doesn't look so hot. But, it's not burying your head in the sand and escaping the issues. It's just taking a break from the issues to refuel.
Do you notice a change in the people who are attending your shows post-election? I mean, are they talking to you about this stuff?
Yes, they are. I mean, some had come from a march and they said, laughter, made us feel, so good. And I DJ also at the Monster. And, the week after Trump was elected, I mean, people were, just coming up and thanking me and saying thank you for giving us a release because, moving your body to the music. I mean, listen, it's something that I think a lot of people perceive as bad has happened. But, that doesn't mean that everything is bad. Right now, in the shock of Trump's election happening, it seems very bad, but it could get worse. But that doesn't mean that you don't still enjoy Psalms or The Bachelorette or dancing or comedy.
When in doubt, dance. Let's go next to Bill in Somerville, New Jersey. Bill,
hi.
Tell me what you're consuming post-election.
Well, I started out wanting to just bring up the comfort and the kind of activism motivation of Michael Franti and Spearhead, especially the songs Everybody on a Move and Hello Bonjour. Just this morning was played back-to-back on another radio station with Hello Goodbye, and it was like the perfect thing to lift my spirits this morning. But there's, just the way that you're phrasing it is consuming media, there's kind of part of the problem I see is that we act like it's about being entertained. And I think part of the real problem of our political discourse is that we see these politicians and their campaigns as entertainment. And there was it's the same bread and circuses, Roman Empire sort of problem where are you entertained was a line, or actually are you not entertained, from the Gladiator movie a decade and a half ago. And I'm just, beside the Michael Franti, I'm thinking that the deeper question you raise is that this, are we being entertained or are we just and is that good for us?
Well, Bill,
I do take comfort in Franti and more political stuff. I brought up to your screener about Pansy Division have a new album out called Quite Contrary with a song called Blame the Bible that has actually been getting some notice in certain gay music charts around the web. And there's so many things. Just yesterday I saw I had the words pop into my brain from the old Elvis Costello song Brilliant Mistake, and the line began, he thought he was the king of America. And I was like, oh, this is going to be the theme song for the next administration.
Bill in Somerville, thank you for your call. Bunny, do you know those artists, Michael Franti, Pansy Division? I'm not
Pansy
familiar.
Yes, I do. I will have to look out for that remix. But, you know, I agree. But a lot of people are penalizing the news because they were drawn to reporting. I mean, even MSNBC was reporting, you know, which is allegedly, you know, liberal, reporting that, you know, for the first 45 minutes about what outrageous thing Trump had said. Well, he is, you know, going to say something outrageous anytime you put a mic to. That's why he didn't take out ads. You know, I mean, it's like he didn't need to. He was given the full news hour, and a lot of people are blaming the news media for Trump because they did not discuss the issues because the salacious comments mocking John McCain's war record, mocking a reporter with disabilities, calling Carla Rina Fear the Ugly. We all know those, but we don't know what his basic policies are. Turns out it's cut taxes on the wealthy, which does nothing for the working class that he, you know, got to vote for him while still selling steaks and champagne. So this was an issue-free campaign, and people would complain about Bernie Sanders always going on about income inequality. It's not sexy. Well, it happens to be something that is affecting a lot of people in this country. So whether it's sexy or not, the news should not be entertaining.
Yeah, I had that thought. You know, my mind keeps going back to that day last year when we saw Donald and Melania Trump coming down the escalator, and to, I think I first saw it on The Daily Show, and so it instantly seemed kind of ridiculous to me. But it was a news event, and yet I agree with you. I think in a lot of media we've sort of blended the two, which is fun to do, but perhaps it's having a bad effect
on
things.
I would marvel at Chris Matthews on MSNBC saying, when we come back, we're going to talk about how Trump, who is doubling down over these Miss Universe comments, what he needs to do to get his campaign back on track. I'm watching MSNBC. I don't want any Republican. I certainly don't want to, you know, to give Trump a strategy to win. I mean, that's just crazy.
All right. Well, speaking of entertainment, we got more tweets coming in. One from Corrine Daniel. Rewatching this silly sketch from Conan on Pizza Rat makes me laugh and is a great distraction to all this. There's a lot more weird stuff on the web. And tweet from Petal Cookie. Classical music to the rescue, WQXR. Thank you for the plug for the other greatest FM radio station in New York City, our sister station, WQXR. Let's go to another call. Mari in Carteret, New Jersey. What are you watching?
Hi. I've actually been binge-watching all 8 seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race, plus the 2 seasons of RuPaul's All-Stars.
Uh-huh. What does that do for you, Mari?
It's actually, like, allowing me to relax, laugh at not only the ridiculous characters that are on that show, but also...
We are not ridiculous.
Are you kidding me? Cece O'Hara is ridiculous. I really don't care.
I'm ridiculous too, honey. I'm teasing.
That's the best part of it. That's the thing. Like, with all this literally drama that's been happening around the recent election, it's great to just laugh at not only other people, but laugh at ourselves and find a community that can find joy in the shadiest shade and the ugliest read and just literally artwork what these girls are doing. And as a woman, that watching them makes me feel stronger.
Really?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And Mari, how did the election treat you? Like, you know, the day after, how were you feeling?
Well, the election, I literally went through the grieving process. I on and off cried the first 2 days. And then, you know, there was denial, like, oh, maybe all these things on Facebook saying Clinton might come back with the Electoral College. And then right now I'm in the place where it's okay, this is reality, this is what it is. We don't know what will happen, and we just have to wait and see.
All right, Mari, thank you for your call. Let's go next to Bonnie in Suffolk, Long Island. Bonnie, tell me, what art or culture are you drawing inspiration from right now?
I have been watching The West Wing on repeat along with Parks and Recreation just over and over, trying to soothe my post-election anxiety.
Does that help to imagine the inside of the White House?
It helps, like, while I'm watching it, and then the episode's over, and I, like, check, I don't know, the internet, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is a nightmare, like, Jeff Sessions, all this crazy stuff, and it just gets really depressing. But I forgot what season it was of Parks and Rec, but Leslie Knope is mayor, and she's tried so hard and done her best, and her town still hates her, and it seems like the lowest point of her life, but then she comes back to do something even better, and that's kind of been inspirational in a really cheesy way for me post-election. So that's been good, I guess. Trying to see the good and the bad that's been happening.
All right, Bonnie, thank you for your call. enjoy your binge. I hope you rediscover some new shows that are coming out too. But I don't know, Bonnie, is that the place that you go when in doubt? Go to the classics, the hits, the comfort food of entertainment?
Well, you know, I like New York because it has a street scene and you encounter people. And on any given day, you might see someone Muslim, someone in a wheelchair, someone trans, someone gay. I mean, you know, you and where I come from in down south in Tennessee, you know, you're walking down the street as one of those categories and the bottle comes flying out of the car, you know, and they yell a slur at you. I think in New York, by the fact that we're forced to be together, I think, you know, we are a bit more human than in other parts of the country where people use their cars as a cigarette and drink holder to drive to their neighbor's house, where they only experience people like them. Then they drive to work and experience other people like them. So, you know, and the algorithms on Facebook are doing the same thing where, you know, people just get more and more into these holes. And I think it's important to get out and encounter actual people and, you know, go be in a room, you know, where there is a show or like Hamilton or like Transgender or on a dance floor and just, you know, be with people and feel their humanity and connect with them on that level. Does that sound really Pollyanna after we've just elected a fascist?
A little bit, but I too get kicks out of talking to complete strangers. You know, there's a particular, you obviously are not a fan of Donald Trump. You just use an F word to describe him, but one that you can say on the air. No, it wasn't the bad one. It was when you can say on air. But I'm curious because Donald Trump has said he's, quote, fine with same-sex marriage. We saw Peter Thiel speak at the Republican convention primetime and say he is gay. And, you know, for all the groups that are really concerned about what a Trump presidency might look like for them, it sort of seems like maybe gay people have a little bit less to worry about than others. I don't know. Do you have like a sense of whether this could be sort of that, whether like the whole gay issue is maybe just settled and America has agreed to move on?
Well, that may be Trump's position, and some will tell you, well, gays have done his makeup, not his hair, in Hollywood over the decades. He's, you know, cosmopolitan Manhattanite. But, you know, maybe he picked Mike Pence, the very evangelical VP, to kind of, you know, counteract his crudeness and win over the evangelical crowd. Or maybe, I mean, because Pence is scary, very scary to the gays. And, I mean, Pence passed some anti-gay legislation that even cost him businesses. I think
that's right. Indiana was where this pizza parlor was, right?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I mean, and this intersection of religion and wasn't George W. Bush's spiritual advisor the Dominionist who believed that, well, I think he was caught with meth and hustlers, but I think they believe that Ted Haggard, is that correct?
Yeah, you're testing the limits of my brain space, but it might be.
Obviously,
yeah.
I'm not a millennial. I'm old and I remember that stuff. But somewhat. But yeah, I mean, aren't there a certain type of Christians who, one of whom was George W. Bush's spiritual advisor, where they seek out conflict in the Middle East because they think the second of coming of Christ can't happen until there is such a conflict? That's very frightening.
All right. Lots of interesting things to imagine and anticipate from the next presidential administration. We've got to take a quick station break, and I have to thank Lady Bunny. Thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much. Find something fun to do.
You have a show tonight, right?
Pardon me?
You have a show tonight, is that right?
Not tonight.
Okay.
I'm going to watch the news. No, I mean, I'm going to go look for a classic. I'm going to watch the Canadian Bachelorette.
There you go.
While reading the Psalms and listening to Pansy Division.
So many good recommendations. Bunny, thank you so much. Pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
And you're listening to a special post-election live call-in episode of the United States of Anxiety, WNYC's election series that explores voters' motivations, hopes, and fears. I'm Ilya Marritz. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this.
This is a special post-election call-in episode of the United States of Anxiety, WNYC and the nation's election series that documents the experiences and perspectives that informed voters and their choice for president. You can hear the entire United States of Anxiety series at wnyc.org/anxiety and leave a comment letting us know what's on your mind during this divisive time. United States of Anxiety is also available as a podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or on the WNYC app.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a special post-election live call-in episode of the United States of Anxiety from WNYC. I'm Ilya Marritz. And amidst the responsibilities of the presidential transition, Donald Trump took to Twitter this weekend to play the role of cultural critic. In particular, the thin-skinned president-elect set his sights on the Broadway musical Hamilton and on Saturday Night Live, which Trump said is, quote, completely one-sided and, quote, not funny at all. I think he was taking a jab at Alec Baldwin's portrayal of him. This, of course, is not the first time Trump has offered his take on popular culture. Here he is criticizing some celebrity surrogates for Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail earlier this month.
So she got Jay-Z and Beyonce, and the language they used was so bad. The language is so bad. And as they were singing, talking, was it talking or singing? I don't know.
Joining me now to continue our conversation on the role of the arts and artists in Donald Trump's America is Jeff Chang. He's the executive director of the Institute for Diversity in the Arts at Stanford University. His latest book is We Gonna Be All Right, Notes on Race and Resegregation. He's perhaps best known for his 2004 book, Can't Stop, Won't Stop, A History of the Hip-Hop Generation. Jeff, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Ilya.
And listeners, this is a reminder to you that we want you to be a part of this conversation. What art are you consuming in the wake of the election and why? Number to call is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. It can be a book, music, a movie, a TV show, you name it. We want to broaden the conversation out to those who have taken up a new hobby or interest in the wake of the election. I had a friend who went to the World Championships of Chess the other week and said it was very refreshing. Number to call is 212-433-9692. Let us know what you are doing to stay sane. Jeff, there's a lot of talk about the kind of art that's going to come out in Donald Trump's America. And I've actually heard quite a few people say that this could be a good time for hip hop. I don't know if you're one of those people, but why is that belief out there, do you think?
Well, you know, it has been a good couple of years, I think, for hip hop, because I think that hip hop has been responding to social justice movements in so many ways. You asked what people have been listening to. I've been listening to Solange nonstop, her album Seat at the Table. And, you know, just thinking a lot about how she, in so many ways, I don't know, maybe it was prophetic or kind of saw what was coming, but sort of, you know, captures this feeling of being very weary and yet trying to find some sort of path forward, you know, to be able to live through all this. Certainly Beyonce and Kendrick Lamar. And so many other artists, J. Cole, I mean, the list goes on and on, have been putting out amazing records, D'Angelo, Kamasi Washington, that have been speaking right into the moment. And I think that in some ways, you know, artists are have risen to the occasion. And so, you know, who knows what's going to happen moving forward, but I think that artists are mobilized and ready to talk.
What is it about the Solange album that grabs you?
Gosh, you know, the song Weary, it makes me break down every time I hear it. And I try, just to give you an idea.
That's an endorsement.
I'm listening to it probably twice or three times a day. You know, it's just a song that just speaks to what it means to wake up and feel like, wow, I've got to do this again. I've got to struggle through this again. I thought it was moving forward, you know? And yet at the end, sort of, she advocates self-care, exactly what you guys have been talking about, you know? I'm going to go and find my glory. I'm going to find my body, and I'll be back real soon.
Turning inwards.
Yeah, the turning inwards and that sort of sense of being able to find the answers by reflecting on how you know how people have come before and the strength that they've given us to be able to continue.
All right, let's get to a couple calls and then we will talk more about hip hop in particular and resistance. We have Greg on the line in New York. Greg, tell me what art is inspiring you? Excuse me, right now.
Well, I've gone to the Metropolitan Museum of Art to see the Max Beckmann exhibition. Mm-hmm. Max Beckmann was a painter, one of the great artists in the history of modern art. He had to leave Germany because Adolf Hitler designated his work and the works of other German expressionists as degenerate. So you can correlate that to the kind of protesting that Mr. Trump is conducting now. The Beckmann exhibition features some paintings that I believe really touch the nerve pulse of what is going on now, not only here, but worldwide. I've received an email from a friend of mine in Germany. He's rereading The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, and I think it's a very serious issue. You think about the swastikas that appeared in the New School campus out in Crown Heights. We are going through a revision of a very dark time in history. The other thing that I've watched recently was Steven Spielberg's film Schindler's List.
Greg, I'm curious, is there any particular, you know, if I go to the Beckmann exhibit, I'd like to go. Is there any particular picture that grabbed you there? Any particular image?
Well, there's one painting called Atelier Nacht, the Night Studio. And it's a painting that has metaphors in it, birds and what have you. But you can also see that there are figures that are being tortured. The Departure is a large triptych that definitely shows some disturbances. A lot of the paintings in the show are self-portraits, which really identify Beckmann's greatness as a painter. But some of these paintings that have narrative themes are the ones you want to look at. There are two or three large triptychs worth looking at. You can see people being tortured, which would be totally related with the Holocaust, etc. So these are the things you want to look at because they definitely connect with the kind of pulse that is going on right now.
Well, you can travel in time through the power of art. Greg, thank you for your call. Let's go next to Pauly in Brooklyn. Tell me, Pauly, what culture are you consuming in the wake of the election?
Hi. I just finished a book called White Trash, The 400-Year Untold History of Class of America.
Okay. Tell me about it.
I will. There's actually a paragraph at the end where she's, you know, kind of summarizing all of her arguments. And she says, like, basically any time that the U.S. moves forward to help people that are in poverty, to help the poor, that there's a knee-jerk reaction by the rest of the American public to fight back against that. And one of the things that she talks about is Obamacare.
Huh.
And so it really broke my heart when I read it, because I realized, like, I should have seen this coming. I should have read this book earlier, or finished this book earlier.
You started it before the election and finished it afterwards?
Exactly.
These things happen. Polly, thank you for your call, Polly. Jeff, I wonder what you think about sort of the emergence of, I guess, sort of white identity in this election. You've written so much about black identity and hip hop identity, and it seems like white identity's probably kind of always been there, but we haven't really talked about it that much.
Yeah, I mean, I've written about that too, and I think that in so many ways, what this election about has been just that. It's been the notion of trying to think about ways to use narrow appeals to now what we can call white nationalism, white supremacy, these kinds of ideas, but mainstreaming them through a populist type of sense. Those who voted with the economy as their number one issue voted a majority for Hillary Clinton, and Hillary won the votes of those who made under $50,000. She won majorities of those folks as well. When you kind of turn around and look at who voted for Trump, he was making very explicit calls to white identity, and as the caller said, this is something that's not new. After you have the civil rights movement and the peak of that, you get the sort of Nixon Southern Strategy backlash. You go back and you look at Reconstruction and you see from that the rise of Jim Crow and segregation.
What did you
segregation?
I wonder what you made of that clip that we played just a few minutes ago at the beginning of the segment of Donald Trump reacting to Jay-Z and Beyonce. Doing a performance, I guess, at a Hillary Clinton rally. And he was basically kind of saying, they cursed a lot. Do you call that music? Is that really singing? I don't know if you'd heard that clip before, but I wonder what you make of what he was saying with that.
I mean, in some ways it was going back 30 years, right, to the this is not music, this is trash, this is the kind of stuff that is talking about cop killing. It's taking us back 30 years into the culture, the heart of the culture wars. And he made those calls explicitly, as ways to kind of sound the dog whistles, to be able to say, do you not like the way that the culture is moving? Hip-hop culture reflecting in so many ways this rise of a potentially new majority, a new cultural majority, that's much more multicultural and less sort of steeped in whiteness than the U.S. has ever been.
I heard him saying something else, too, though, which was, mm-hmm. I mean, I felt like the subtext was kind of, y'all are beating up on me for these many vulgar comments that I have made over the months and years, but now you're celebrating Jay-Z and Beyonce for like also being vulgar, and I get like almost a note in his voice like he feels it's sort of unfair.
Mm.
I mean, we're not here to psychoanalyze Donald Trump, but it sort of struck me that he really seemed upset that they could say those things in an artistic context that he maybe couldn't say in another context.
I mean, it's possible. The song that showed up on all those CNN clips and all the other clips was Freedom. So I'm not sure what exactly he was referring to. Maybe he's, if you're kind of sort of being generous, I guess you could say that, he could have talked about, some of Jay-Z's more explicit lyrics or Beyonce's, more explicit types of lyrics. But I don't think that was really where he needed to go with it. I think that he had a crowd before him that was largely middle-aged and up and could play to that whole thing of, is this music? Are we talking about music? You know, and the language.
Right.
You know, it's, but I get your point. I think that might be a little bit generous for him.
You're listening to the United States of Anxiety on WNYC. I'm Ilya Meritz. My guest is the author Jeff Chang, and our number is 212-433-WNYC. Please join our conversation on arts and culture in Trump's America. We really want to know, what are the cultural products that you're turning to? The books, the music, the movies, you name it. The number, again, is 212-433-9692. Let's go to another caller, Jenny in Brooklyn. Tell me about your cultural habits post-election.
Hey, well, thanks for this series. It's been great. I'm a filmmaker, best known for Paris is Burning, and I'm making a memoir-like film now. So I've been reading some books that are, you know, in the first person, or one novel that's sort of based on the writer's experience. So I read Nabokov's Speak Memory, and it's a great book because it's poetry, and we really need poetry now. And, you know, the writer was an emigre. He had to leave. He had to learn to write in another language. I read my friend Jacqueline Woodson's book, Another Brooklyn. That's a novel about, but it's kind of based on her experience about four African-American girls growing up in Brooklyn. She just wrote a great piece in the New York Times Magazine about telling her son, who's only grown up with Obama as president and is 8 years old, you know, what are we going into? How does that feel to her son? And, you know, her book is about the fact that America has been challenging to a lot of people's ancestors and to a lot of people, and this is not new. And then the third book is, I read Travels with
Charlie. You're reading three books at once?
Yeah, well, I read a lot. Travels with Charlie by Steinbeck, which is, you know, written like when I was born. He drives around the country with his dog, Charlie, and he ends up in New Orleans, where these horrible white women called cheerleaders go to harass this little African-American girl who's trying to go to a newly integrated school. And they're evil people. And so it's really important to remember that everything that's happening now, it's not new, it's coming around again, and we are going to have to keep fighting it.
Jenny, I'm so pleased you called. Paris is Burning is an amazing movie, and there's probably like 10 questions that I want to ask you about it, but let's let's go with maybe just one or two.
Thanks for saying that.
I think part of what makes the film really powerful, and if you haven't seen it, listeners, go out and check it out. It's about, drag queens and voguers in, the early 90s, around the year 1990?
Late 80s.
And a lot of the lingo that is popular with white people that I know now, like shade and stuff like that, people were saying that, you know, more than two decades ago. Anyway, part of what makes it powerful, I think, is the listening that you bring in that movie to people that you otherwise never really heard from very much. And I don't know. I wonder if you think that that would be useful to do today, maybe with some other group or some other cultural scene.
Well, don't you think listening is the key word? I mean, listening, like, we yell at each other on social media, can we listen, do we listen? One reason maybe the election went the way it went is that there, you know, it's been talked about a lot, there are a lot of fake facts. And there are a lot of people who listen to dog whistles that feed a lot of stuff, I guess some of them have looked at. But a lot of things that people haven't looked at. And so, you know, the next phase needs to be about listening. I'm glad you brought that up.
All right, Jenny, thank you for your call. Jeff, any early indication from music, from hip-hop, or from any of the communities that you follow about sort of how artists are already responding to the prospect of President Trump?
Absolutely. There's so many things that are happening. But just another shout out too, just to Jenny for Paris is Burning, because, you know, this is a period she's filming during the Reagan-Bush era, right? And this is a period in which the culture wars are raging full tilt. But here are folks finding communities and building places to be able to dance. I mean, this is exactly what you and Lady Bunny were talking about, you know, finding ways to be able to sustain each other and to create these art forms that have now changed the world. And, so it's helpful to know that people have always done that, even in times of very deep turmoil in trouble. One of the things that's been most promising to me is to see what Hank Willis Thomas and a whole bunch of amazing artists have been doing, which has been to put billboards up all across the country with pictures from history and the words Make America Great Again on it. One of them that's most controversial was put up in the heart of Mississippi with a picture of the marchers trying to cross the Selma Bridge, 1965, the Edmund Pettus Bridge, and being met with policemen on the other side and the words Make America Great Again on top of it, written on top of it. It's powerful.
And that's you'd have to go to Mississippi to see that as an installation?
No, they've bought billboards, so they're up in public.
Oh,
there's
I see.
Pictures that have been taken of these, and they're, you know, sweeping across the internet. They've gone viral. And they're really artists trying to make the point. You know, this is exactly what you know, Trump was trying to push towards in using that particular slogan, in evoking the Southern strategy, you know, which comes after the civil rights movement as a way of mobilizing anger and a backlash against the civil rights movement. This is a return to that, and that's the kind of art that's being made. But, you know, thousands of artists across the country are standing up, are making art, making music, doing all kinds of things that I think, you know, have been giving people hope. I mean, one of the most powerful things happened in Brooklyn Heights yesterday, and that was, you know, after swastikas were put at Adam Yauch's Park, right? MCA from the Beastie Boys, the hip-hop community, and Ad Rock, you know, from the Beastie Boys kind of leading it, sort of went to the park and said, not in our name, this is not going to go down like this. We're not going to stop until everybody's free. And that was, I think, a really powerful moment to kind of send out to the world that, you know, we've come too far to turn back.
I wonder, Jeff, is anybody like in the hip hop community kind of into Trump in the sense that, you know, he not only is a businessman, but he really plays a mogul to full tilt, you know, and everything's like gilt, you know, and everything's marble and gold. And he has, you know, serial beautiful wives. Is anybody into that? Yeah, I guess Kanye, right.
Apparently Kanye is, although, you know, he's canceled the rest of the tour because of the backlash that he's been facing out here in California at his concerts around it. But no, you know, the last 6 months have seen an explosion of songs that have been about, you know, expletive Donald Trump. You know, they've been like down with Donald Trump in a lot stronger terms than that, of course. And I think that's going to continue. I think that's going to just keep on going.
All right, let's hear next from Brenda in Brooklyn. Tell me, what have you been doing post-election?
Like a lot of people, I was very disappointed with the outcome, and I decided to write letters to friends of mine all over, most of them in Europe.
Like handwritten letters?
Exactly. Handwritten letters with my name on the envelope, and I know people in Switzerland and Germany and a lot of countries, and I think that Europe is looking to the United States. And they were as shocked as could be that Donald Trump won the election. And they have had a much greater influx of Muslims than we have from Syria and other countries. And they're looking to the United States for guidance, how to absorb people, how to make them into the next generation of citizens. And if Donald Trump is the president, I think the guidance they're going to get is very, very poor. It's like, just kick them out. Just kick them out. That's all you have to do. Get rid of them.
Brenda, I'm wondering, when was the last time you'd written a letter prior to this flurry of letter writing?
Oh, probably a condolence letter, because I write those by hand. If somebody dies, I don't buy a store thing. I write a note if it's somebody who's close. And, you know, a lot of my friends have lost parents and sisters and brothers.
And what does it do for you to pick up a pen and actual paper and
it's
write
wonderful.
That letter?
It's a wonderful feeling. It's very textual. You're writing it, and then you take a stamp and you put it on the envelope, and you hope it gets delivered. You know, my mail isn't delivered till 6 p.m. in the evening.
You don't say. Are you hoping to get some letters back?
No, I haven't gotten any letters back. No.
All right, Brenda, thank you for your call. Let's go next to Mike in Brooklyn. Tell me, what have you been up to since the election?
Hello there. I am a composer and my wife's a choreographer. So one of the things that we thought we had to do first was kind of like keep our souls alive. And so we're already working on a piece that deals directly with race issues in America. And so this was kind of like the perfect fuel. And I think for everybody who's out there, like, it's great if you need to do something to feel better, like binge watch. But really, if this really hits you hard, then put that feeling into action. And there's so many ways out there to do things. And that, in a way, it's like the best thing to do, you know, support the arts and keep yourself full of joy. So that's what we're doing.
Jeff, any questions for Mike, knowing what you know about what artists are up to?
Yeah, sort of. How do you see the next couple of years playing out in terms of the kind of work that you see yourself doing in collaboration with folks?
Well, the one thing that I've noticed is that a lot more people have been talking to each other in the art scene. Like I was just at, there's a place in Park Slope called Barbez, and I was just there last night, and it was basically a gathering to say, what do we do after this election? And so, you know, I kind of feel like all art is inherently political or activist. I mean, just doing something, and you see that with, you know, even Hamilton, it's activist. And by just doing that, like, people will peg you, oh, you're an artist, you must automatically be liberal. So I feel like, as Leonard Bernstein said, you know, we need to make art with more intensity than we ever have. Mm-hmm. And if you're motivated to make, you know, political art that's very clearly that way, then you should do that too.
Mike in Brooklyn, thank you for your call. We were almost out of time, but I want to get to at least one more caller. Perry in Brooklyn, we have about a minute for you. So tell me what you've been up to.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I'll try to be quick. I just want to say that I'm an artist and I am queer. And I think right now it's just so important to consume work by queer artists, by people of color, and just really like getting on Instagram and finding voices. It's just really important. I also wanted to talk about Audre Lorde, what she calls her biomythography, called Zami, A New Spelling of My Name, which is spelled Z-A-M-I. It's a account of her life as a Black lesbian growing up in the 40s, 50s, and 60s in New York. And it's just, like, such an amazing piece because there were barely any people out at all, let alone people of color, let alone second-generation women. And just the story of her very small community that she found brought me just like, it brings me a lot of hope that even if things like get really, really bad, like we have each other and we have our communities and we're here to lift each other up.
Thank you, Perry. Jeff, in the short time that we have remaining, Audre Lorde, is that, are you steeped in any of her work? You drawn anything from her writings?
Oh no, absolutely. Just the same kind of vibe, you know, that we're going to survive, we're going to do this together, and we're going to come out of it stronger for it. We're going to be all right.
Let's hope so. I feel like we're ending on kind of a down note. I know there are people out there who are also very hopeful for the new Trump administration, but what I'm hearing today is a lot of people who maybe want to take a break from the news and either binge watch The West Wing or go deep into inward looking stuff. So I guess that Solange album, that's your tip for our audience, Jeff, huh?
Yeah, absolutely, definitely.
All right. My thanks to Jeff Chang, Lady Bunny, and to you for listening and sharing your thoughts with me and everyone else tonight on WNYC. Our call-in series continues tomorrow night on WNYC. You can find the United States of Anxiety series right on our homepage at WNYC.org. My name is Ilya Meritz. Thank you and good night.